To order. Thank you, members, for being here. It's been difficult to start on time, one, because we have the committee before us has been backing up into us. So I appreciate if you can get here. We're also having some technical difficulties, so hopefully we'll get that straightened out and get the PowerPoint going here. I want to thank you all for the good questions at our last committee meeting with Arthur Reynolds and Art Rolnick. I thought that was really a good meeting as we kind of presented the foundational research of why we should invest in early childhood. Today we're going to talk about more innovations. We have the MELF with us, the Minnesota Early Learning Fund, will be first. Next we will have Lauren Siegel from United Way is going to talk about what they're doing in terms of child care and young children. And then we will have the department, I think, is here, right? To talk about the Governor's Summit and some of the innovations that happened there. We are waiting to do the school readiness assessment because it just was too much to do everything in one day, and I think it would be good for all of you and me too to hear about that assessment a little more deeply and in a little more detail. Just to talk about some of the things that are coming up, on Thursday we will be doing the Governor's Budget from the Department of Education. So if you've seen that, the big innovative idea is the scholarships, so we'll be talking more about that. So think about questions you want to ask the department. On next Tuesday, we're going to be doing our tour. We are going to go to a child care facility that has a high percentage of basic sliding fee and MFIP participants. So we're going to try to carpool for that. So see Sarah if you're interested and can carpool, and we'll get you directions. I think we would want to meet here at 4 or downstairs at 4. We'll let you know on Thursday and go over there. We're going to split up the committee into two groups, and they're going to tour, talk about what's happening in those programs, and also so you can meet participants, meet families and kids that are participating in that program. So I think that'll be interesting. Oh, and then we... if you're interested and it works for your schedule, we would like to do dinner afterwards at My Village. Of course, on your own per diem, I have to say. So I can't say I'm going to treat you to dinner, but if you have the time, it would be a good night for us to socialize and get to know each other a little bit better. So that's next Tuesday. And then the next Thursday, we will do the Department of Health and Human Services part of the Governor's Budget. So we have it out quite a ways here. We're also going to do Citizen Day. We're at Citizens Inn talking about the programs, and we're going to have Advocates Day. So we're getting this planned out a little ways here. With that, we need to approve the minutes. And let's see, Representative Murphy, have you read the minutes?
Yes.
Good. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Governor Murphy has moved the approval for the minutes from the last meeting on Thursday, January 18th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, good. That motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. And with that, we want to hear about MELF. Did we get the welcome to the committee? This is Barb Yates. And did you get the PowerPoint working? If you could also introduce yourself for the record and let us know if you're prepared here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Yates. I'm with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, and I am ready, although not technologically, but we'll go ahead anyway. Let's keep going, if that's okay.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yes, we'll continue and hopefully get you up and running.
It's okay. Well, I want to thank the committee for allowing me this opportunity to bring you a progress report on what the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation has been up to in this past year. I believe in your packet you have a copy of our report. That's what I'm going to go through, and frankly, that's what the PowerPoint had on it were pieces of this, so you have everything in front of you that I'm going to talk about, so that's fine. The Minnesota Early Learning Foundation is a 501c3. It was established in 2005. The Minnesota Early Learning Foundation was actually the brainchild of Ready for K and a group that they work with to get business leaders involved, the MinVEL, that had a name that had a long acronym before and I don't remember it, but MinVEL was a group that Ready for K pulled together to try to get business leaders more involved. And through their work and the work of that organization, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation came into being. It was created out of the concern that business leaders primarily had, worrying about our workforce and what the workforce was going to be like in the future if we didn't have children well-educated and ready.
You know, Ms. Chase, I'm going to interrupt for just a second. Representative Garofalo, we're having technical difficulties, and I wonder if you could consult. Is that okay? Please?
Yeah.
And so we'll see if we get that under control. And then I also want to tell the members we'll go about 20 minutes, and then we will have about 15 minutes of questions so that you know to think of questions during Ms. Yates' presentation. So thank you. Please proceed. Oh, thank you. We understand. I mean, stuff happens. Representative Garofalo got us going last time, so I thought maybe he'd be able to do it again.
Yeah, I'll try, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
For the testifier, one question. Do you have the power supply with you?
Yes.
The power supply?
I can answer.
Okay. Well, we'll hear more about MELF here in a second.
And while I have the chair, Madam Chair, I'll tell you that my company that I work for right now is currently considering outsourcing their IT. So if anyone needs any network engineering experience, I might be available.
So now we're doing ads on the side.
Yeah. We should charge it for that.
I was going to say, we should pay. That's a way to generate revenue for the state. There we go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you know, the PowerPoint really isn't that good either.
Well, thanks for telling us now.
This is the first time I was going to try using the PowerPoint with this presentation. So, but let me go on. The Early Learning Foundation, our mission and purpose, and this was in statute.
Madam Chair,
years ago.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. For anybody that's viewing this, maybe we're doing the password. Now are we ready? Maybe?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Good. Okay. This happens. Okay.
Then in 2004, the purpose of MELF is for us to figure out what are the most cost-effective ways to make sure that all low-income children from low-income families or from other challenged families are ready for kindergarten. And we're working off of the data that you are of looking at children not being fully prepared. The Department of Ed statistic on that is 50%. We know that some of those children do catch up, that they're just some normal variations in development. But we also know there's a significant percentage there that start behind, and unfortunately some of them never catch up. And that represents the very difficult achievement gap that K-12 struggles with. And we believe that we will be able to help with that a great deal if we can make sure that children are coming to school and to kindergarten ready to learn. So that's what's firing our board and our work. The business leaders, as I said, they have a personal investment because of their businesses and wanting to make sure that they have the workforce that will be able to respond. And they care a great deal about this issue. Our board is made up of CEOs in this area.
We're experiencing password issues again. Excuse me. Okay, here we go. Hopefully. Here we go. Okay. I think we're all going to really enjoy this PowerPoint once it's up and running. And it does add interest. We could tell some jokes while we're waiting. The early childhood. maybe we won't. I know some third grade jokes. We could. You know the difference between what the zero said to the eight? Nice belt. Yeah, that's a good one.
Gee. Are we ready yet?
Anybody like this? Are there any? There we go. All right, and we have our PowerPoint up. And this will be worth it. MELF is actually going to be really important, members, as we get into this. You need to know what they're doing versus what we're doing at the legislature. And here we go. All right, set to go?
We are set to go.
Thank you.
Did I move it?
Oh, I didn't do that.
Okay, well, let's just proceed without it at this point.
That's a terrible ad for us.
Oh, you.
Okay. I won't move. This is more challenging than I thought.
The connector must be working or something.
All right.
Can we do it?
Yes.
All right.
I still know what happened.
Don't touch anything.
This is my one and only slide.
Very nice.
Okay. Just another day here at the legislature. Ms. Yates! 4:15. 15 minutes.
Okay. What we have first looked at were the gaps in the system for serving young children. Frankly, that's a misnomer to call it a system. We don't have an early care and education system. We got a lot of pieces of the system, but we don't have a system to work from. And we looked at the information gaps, quality gaps, access gaps, and resource gaps that exist, and that's what we will be examining as well. We intend to come back to you with a set of recommendations on how you would put a system together, what would be the most cost-effective way to do that, and some recommendations. We hope that we can be as specific as enough for you to say, given limited resources, where would you start putting the first dollar to get the most bang for the buck? That's a challenging mission. We're going to do this in 5 years. And what you see today is the start and the launch of that. And we are committed to closing our doors at the end of 2011 when we've completed this task. And it's a challenging task, as you can imagine, but we believe that it's doable. If we had unlimited resources, we could make sure today we know enough. We have enough research to know how to make sure that children are ready for kindergarten. But the issue is we don't have unlimited resources, as you are going to be struggling with, if not today, as you go on in this session. So we want to try to figure that out and to be able to be helpful with folks. One of the our specific goals are to identify effective models, evidence-based models, for the components of the system, and that includes parent education and early care and education programs. We want to optimize opportunities for families to choose the right kind of care for their family and for their children, and to make sure that that care is high quality and that they have some ways of doing that. And we're doing that through the piloting of a quality rating system, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. We also want to determine how to best support the professional development for providers of early care and education, and we also want to make sure that we have a cost-effective set of services. We're going to try to develop a picture of how the funding, services, and policy best work together to form an integrated system, and we want to develop ways to gauge how the programs contribute to the school readiness of children through measures that are based on real experiences of children. And one of the things, I referred to the research, we have a lot of research, particularly about what works at a program level. One of the major challenges, though, is how do you scale that? It's very difficult to take an individual program's evaluation and then decide you want to do that statewide. There are a lot of issues with that. What kind of infrastructure do you need? How do you guarantee that you have the right level of quality to get the same results? You know, one of the things that we're hearing from some of the early universal preschool assessments coming back, they're not getting the results that people had hoped for. They're not as high level of results, and there were a couple of reasons for that. One of those reasons is that we don't have a workforce up to speed on being able to do this throughout our whole care and education system. We simply don't have enough people trained to do that. We also, and the other thing that was being problematic in those situations too, is that the programs were frankly being done on the cheap for a lot less money than had been done in the program that had been evaluated, and they couldn't get the same results. So there's some challenges, some very real challenges as you go to scale. There are two articles that I would refer you to, and I'll leave those with the committee administrator. One is a speech that Elizabeth Shore gave in October, where she goes through what some of those systems issues are. And there's also another article by Robert Pianta, which is one of the more recent kind of assessment of, given what we know, what are the ways to start stepping forward. So I thought that might be helpful for your work as well. We are, if you go to...
Thank you for using the PowerPoint. I was getting worried that you weren't going to use it after all that. And thank you, Representative Garofalo, for your technical assistance.
That's 1-800.
We have a number of initiatives that we have launched this year to try to put this together, but one of the things that I wanted to talk about was just to let you know, our board is made up, as I started to say earlier, of CEOs in the area. Warren Staley, who is the CEO of Cargill, is the chairperson of our board. Mike Cerisi is on our board. President Brunix from the university is serving on our board. Brad Anderson from Best Buy. Dr. Mark Banks from Blue Cross, Blue Shield. I shouldn't have started down this path because I won't remember all of them, but I wanted you to know these are very, very busy leaders in our community, business leaders, and they've decided that this is a high priority for them. When we started meeting with them, we thought we'd be lucky to get them together a few times a year, and the first thing they said to us is, we want to meet with you. We want you to get us up to speed on this issue. We need longer meetings. We need you to bring in people so that we can get up to speed and make sure that we can get this issue. And our charge to you is get it done. We need to do this. And so we were very pleased at how hands-on they've wanted to be with learning about this issue and making sure that we look at the research, that we do this in a credible way, and that we be able to have some good recommendations for you. I said that our target is to do this in 5 years, and that's absolutely true. But as we learn and as we go, we will publish periodic reports like this one to let you know what we're learning and as we think we have something that maybe will be useful for policymakers. One of our major partnerships is with the University of Minnesota. We are working with the Center for Early Education and Development to do all the evaluation and oversee all the evaluation for everything that we're doing at MELF. One of the first things that they've been working with us is creating a taxonomy where we're looking at all the research that exists in this area and looking at the various program elements. We started with the 10 program elements that Dr. Reynolds used. I think you heard from him last week of successful programs. And then we're adding to that to get some of the systems issues like infrastructure and professional development and those kinds of things so that we can be looking at that as well. We believe this taxonomy, and we've actually been sending it around to various people and to researchers and people like that across the country to look at this, and we're getting a lot of positive feedback that think it can be a useful tool, particularly for policymakers, to look at where are we, what's been done, what hasn't been done, and again, to try to make some of those difficult resource decisions. So we will keep evolving that, and at some point you might be interested in a presentation from the university folks walking you through that document when it gets a little more developed. We'll use that to see where the holes are, and we will continue to make grants or to develop projects to address where those holes in the system are. For example, we think there may very well be some more that we need to look at in terms of home visiting. There are a lot of inconsistent findings. Some look very promising, and they're kind of all over the board. So we think we probably have something to do there, but we want to wait until the review of the research is done and to determine exactly what that might be. The program investments that we are making right now have to do four major areas. And one of them we're calling our innovation or comprehensive scalable community projects. The other one is the quality rating system. A third is the early childhood development scholarship program. And this is a pilot test of the Rolnick scholarship model. And a strategic framework that we're developing in all the evaluation that we've talked to you about. In terms of the comprehensive scalable, I'm going to jump around a little bit because these are all related, but they're kind of hard to lay out on paper, so bear with me just for a few moments. Our comprehensive scalable community projects represent where we are going to do pilots of the quality rating system. And our first partner on that is the City of St. Paul. Mayor Coleman actually met with us the day after he was elected to talk about early childhood and what he could do as mayor. And he will be launching an initiative in this area very soon, but we've made St. Paul one of our pilots. And again, this will be citywide for the quality rating system. In addition, we'll be piloting the Rolnick scholarship model in two neighborhoods in St. Paul. And this will be in the North End neighborhood and the Thomas Dale neighborhood. And we'll be targeting over 4 years 1,400 children in that neighborhood for this project. We also have a partnership in North Minneapolis with the folks, some of you may have heard of the 500 Under 5 initiative. There are a lot of different efforts there, but we're going to try to work there by targeting 500 children in two neighborhoods. They don't really fall along the neighborhood lines. I think these were developed along the school boundary areas, two elementary schools in North Minneapolis. We are targeting neighborhoods where we think are the most children who may be the most behind, the most at risk, have the most struggles of getting to kindergarten. We're not creaming here. We're going at what we think are the more difficult circumstances to try to find ways to support families, to get parents involved, and to get children ready for kindergarten. And so the North Minneapolis Project will also participate in the quality rating system, and there we'll be working more specifically on looking at parent education, how to engage parents that typically have not responded to the other programming we have in that area, and to try to see if we can provide the support through programs. There, for example, we may have program scholarships. So in St. Paul, we're going to do family scholarships, the market-driven enrollment model. In Minneapolis, we're going to look at more of the how do we support the programs, make some resources available to them to help the families that they're working with, and provide training for the various programs and to try to increase quality in those ways. We're going to try to compare these pilots, too, to see what are the strengths and weaknesses, what can we learn through these different models, what works well and what doesn't work well. We have just received proposals for the evaluation of the scholarship model in St. Paul. We did a national search for an evaluator, and we'll be making that selection within the next 3 weeks. We thought that one was important because that's going to be a lot of resources and a lot of folks are interested in whether that model will work or not. So that one has a separate evaluation that will be coordinated by the university, but they will not be conducting that specifically. For the other communities, we are working with the Caring Kids Initiative in Wayzata for a suburban project for the quality rating system. And we also have formed a partnership with the Taylor Corporation and others. Then we'll be working at Blue Earth County and Nicollet County, again, doing the quality rating system pilot there, as well as trying to work very specifically to increase the quality of care in those areas. We have another partnership with Wilder, who's going to go into all of these areas and survey in the community and with providers and parents so that we get a sense of the lay of the land when we start the project. We may do that partway through, and we certainly will do it at the end so we can see the effect on the child care market of what we're doing and for other factors within the community, not only child care but all the other early education programs as well. So those are our major pilots. That's where we're doing the quality rating system. We're working with Child Trends for an evaluation of the quality rating system. That one we're hitting the ground immediately because we need to be able to identify the quality programs so that the parents in the neighborhoods in St. Paul that are receiving scholarships will be able to know which programs they can choose from to send their child to for early education experiences for 3 and 4 year olds. That project also has a family mentoring component for the 0 to 3 years, basically. In some instances, we envision mothers being contacted in the hospital and basically being told you'll have a scholarship available for your child if you'd like to participate in these activities, and that will go for the 5 years until they enter kindergarten. So all of these projects are very exciting. They use different methodology. We'll be looking again across all of them to see what are the most cost-effective ways to do the variety of tasks that we'll be doing in these neighborhoods. And while they may have some very different mechanisms, we believe good things are going to happen for children in all of them. What we don't know are what are the ways to put that together and have that be the most cost-effective. We also have a series of innovative projects. Let's see. That are in the handout that I gave you. Those start on page 10, I believe. There are 12 projects, and these are more specific. They're not as broad as our scalable community projects. There's a very specific maybe research or evaluation question that we're looking at, often having to do with the dosage of programs. One of the things that we think can help us be cost effective and that we don't have much research on is sort of like what intensity of services do different children need based on their needs, and can we match that up? Is it you know, 5 days a week, full days programming, half days for 3 days. If we can get that, figure that out, what works best, what we need to do, and get those matches better, we think we can do it in a more cost-effective way. At least that's the hope in many of these. So there's some. The other thing is looking at different parent education models. Is there any difference in which models work better with low-income families versus parents in other circumstances? Are there ways that we can kind of meld some of those services together to create a better option or an option that parents would be more likely to participate with? There are a wide-ranging group of projects in there. One of them is an accreditation project. We're working with the Department of Human Services to put resources together to help child care centers become accredited. And this is literally financial assistance and technical assistance so that they can do that. We've got some pretty good data that accredited programs seem to do a good job of serving children, and so we think that that's something that will be helpful, and we're targeting that accreditation effort in the scalable communities that I talked about. So in St. Paul, North Minneapolis, and Nicollet Blue Earth County in the western suburbs. So that's how that one will play out. We will be adding the innovation projects again, as I said, as we do a more identification of where the holes are in the research and what are the things that we find we need to know and able to be able to inform the recommendations that we want to make. Here you can just get a sense of our timeline and the various projects. As I said, we have started the quality rating system development. That will be available for providers to apply to in June. So we'll be spending between June to December trying to get as many folks in our target areas involved and identified. And then the scholarship program will start, give or take, a couple of months next January. So that's the at when the scholarships actually start hopefully being made. And then the innovation grants, some of those are anywhere from, sometimes it's 1 year, sometimes it's two, sometimes it's 3 years. So those all vary depending on the project and what they're trying to accomplish. One of the things that we're getting a lot of questions, particularly from legislators, about, well, what do we do now? You know, you're going to take some time to do this, but we've got children who need services now and children who aren't ready for kindergarten, and what kinds of things can we do? I'm not sure I've got exact answers for you on that, but what we have done is gone through the research, and from what we've learned so far, we've listed on page 5, which are initial learnings and recommendations. And we've tried to lay out what we think are 4 things that you might want to apply to your policy recommendations or programming or what you want to do in terms of early childhood for this session. And this is based, again, on the research that we've reviewed so far. Basically, it's important to focus on the outcome, school readiness. It's the most important outcome for programs. And we frankly do have some programs. That's not the focus. Now, there may be good reasons for doing those things. In fact, in many instances there are, but you need to be aware of which programs have the opportunity to be able to impact the school readiness of children and make sure that that's a goal and that they're specifically focused on that. The other thing we would recommend is invest where it's most needed for children who are most at risk. And that goes back to what I said earlier. We know that many of these children that are particularly the most behind when kindergarten starts are those that are going to struggle all the way through. And so we think that at least as a starting point that that's important. That's not to say it's not important to do things for all children, but it is saying this is a serious issue and we do need to make sure that it gets addressed. And if you're limited, this is a place to start. Another point we think is crucial that you empower parents in whatever kinds of policies that you try to pass. The quality rating system, we have put a parent advisory board on that. We've actually are getting one of the businesses that we work with to get their marketing folks to work with us to make sure that we put that together in a way where we have information in there that parents can use and easily use and that will meet their needs so that it will get used. You know, we found a couple things out about quality rating systems when we started doing that. We're the only ones in the country that are developing one whose goal is specifically school readiness. We're also the only one who has a child progress domain as part of the quality rating system. We also found out in doing that that none of the other places really know whether parents are actually using the quality rating system or not. So we want to make sure that it's something that's usable, that it gets used, that we keep an eye on that and constantly revisit whether or not it's doing the job. But you can see with the scholarship program specifically, it's very empowering for parents to be able to have that kind of information and use that information to make sure that programming is available that meets the needs of their child if they want to use that programming. We think it can also be an educational tool to help parents that maybe aren't using those resources or services but can make use of what we've learned in working with their children.
We do want to make sure the members can ask questions. I think this will probably be almost done with these points, and then we'll move into questions.
So right ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you. In my opinion, it's very interesting. One, the legislature created MELF through legislation, and that we have them out there doing this experimental thinking and moving ahead of us to see kind of where we can go. I think the complication comes when you're going to be test piloting things like scholarships next year. Really, is going to be up and running. You said next January, and but yet, you know, the governor's proposal is about scholarships as well. So I think as a legislature, we're trying to decide, and as an early childhood committee, we're all going to be trying to decide what the best use of the dollars are. And you know, part of my question is, do we wait to see what you all come up with first, or do we do something, you know, somewhat in tandem, or how that all is going to work? I know that, did you mention Dwayne? And Dwayne Benson is the director, right? And that he could not be here today, but he's also very involved in this, and I don't know if you want to talk.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Dwayne Benson is the executive director of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. He's out of town today. He was going to try to get back in time, but I told him I was going to be done by 4:30, so if he couldn't make it by then, he wouldn't be here. So he's not going to be here today. Dwayne has been very involved in getting our board together, working with our board, and working with getting the resources in place so that we could carry out this mission.
And when you speak of resources, also we did meet with Warren Staley and Lauren Siegel from United Way, and several the Early Childhood Caucus co-chairs met together to talk about the kind of the future direction. How much does the MELF board hope to raise, and could you just share that with us over what period of time?
Yes, Madam Chair, we are. The MELF board is attempting to raise $30 million. We're in the midst of that fundraising campaign right now. Part of that campaign we're pursuing with the United Way, and we're jointly doing some fundraising. Somewhat to address the questions that you're talking about, we know we need to get going and have our resources very quickly so that we can get this work done in the time period that we're talking about. And we also know that there are children who are entering school not ready to learn right now, and we can't afford to throw them away. So part of the effort of our joint fundraising is for us to get focused on what I've been talking about in United Way. I'm sure that Ms. Siegel will talk in her remarks about what they're going to do right now as we're doing the testing that you're talking about. So they're especially focused in the nine county metro area with looking at some of the same kinds of issues and what can we do now through the programming they have going and that they want to get going to make sure that children are ready.
Okay, good. You know, one of the things that we're going to have a question from Representative Peterson is one of the things I'm thinking of doing, committee members, is forming work groups around certain ideas. For instance, maybe we have one around scholarships. Maybe there's a couple legislators that really want to look at that and what we should do with the governor's proposal and what MELF is doing and so forth. And, you know, I always get this opportunity when I have someone in the hot seat to ask them the questions in front of everybody that I would like to ask. But I am going to ask you one tough one. You know, the board had legislators on it and then did not, and then the legislators, it went private, and so there were no longer legislators involved. Are you open to having an advisory board of legislators?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are absolutely open to having an advisory board made up of legislators. We're also happy to work with legislators on any of these projects if you have a special interest. We think it's real important to coordinate what we're doing, particularly in the scholarship area. And I can tell you, we've been hard at work for a couple of months now on trying to sort out the issues of the scholarship. It's very complex, and we want to make sure whatever we're doing is coordinated. so that we don't make it more difficult for families than it already is to access services. So we are absolutely happy to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And I think, members, if you want to talk to me or talk to Ms. Yates about if you're interested in serving on an advisory board, one thought was, you know, maybe each of us could kind of be a specialist a little bit in different areas. If somebody, if you're interested in QRS, we could have you work with the projects with MELF on that. If you're interested in scholarships, we could, you'd get to know more about that. Both to, so the members develop your knowledge and your leadership, because we need members to be leaders on these areas, but they're complicated, as you can tell. So I think it would be interesting to have a advisory board sort of liaison relationship. Representative Peterson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to follow up a bit on the scholarship amounts. There have been a lot of numbers tossed around in terms of the governor, I believe, talked about $4,000. And having had a little experience just this past weekend with a private, just an open house with a private preschool program, a full day for four-year-olds, and with some after-school potential, you know, till 6 o'clock. But that program cost $18,000 and a year, a school year. And then the I think the speaker from the YMCA talked about a program. I think it was $14,000, wasn't it, for their program? And so when I hear $4,000, I'm a little concerned that falls a bit short of what a really quality program would entail in terms of cost. Do you have any amount in mind in terms of the scholarships that MELF would provide? And is it only money from MELF, or are there other funding streams that would work into those amounts of money that you're talking about? First of all, what would be the amount of the scholarship, and then where would the funding all come from?
Ms. Yates. Madam Chair, Representative, we're still working on the dollars, but we're at around $12,000 right now for the scholarship. We do want to make, and there may be a bonus in addition to that. And again, these are the details we are working on right now. And we're trying to sort through whether that's going to be enough to get the results we need, and that's exactly what goes into it. How much is enough to get there? And we do intend to make use of existing resources, and that's some of the complexity that I was referring to as well. We want to figure out a way that we can, everybody may not need that full scholarship if we can make use of other funding sources, but we want to make sure that there is some added so that there is an incentive for the provider to be able to serve, to provide the quality service and assure us that the child's going to be ready for kindergarten, if at all possible. So we do hope to be able to coordinate this with child care assistance funding, Head Start funding, and all the other funding streams as well. And we may be coming to you as, I think we have one issue right now where we may need some legislation to help make sure that that doesn't screw things up as we add the scholarship for the family.
Thank you. Representative Peterson. Okay, thank you. We're going to have one more question, and then I think we'll go with United Way, because we can also go back and forth a little bit if there are combined questions. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Yates, just to follow up on that question, in your report here, you talk about the current system having information gaps, quality gaps, access gaps, and resource gaps. Mm-hmm. Until such time as we can design the perfect system and then tweak it, are there ways that we could realign current resources, current systems, current programs in the interim that would sort of form a backbone, if you will, or a sort of an outline of what the school readiness early childhood system would look like, or if there are interim ways of doing it rather than just increasing incrementally funding initially?
Ms. Yates?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd be happy to engage in some more discussion with you around what that might be or what some of those steps might look like. I don't have anything right now. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this. Whatever the topic, whether it's early childhood or other topics, everyone always struggles with the categorical funding streams. and it just seems to make it much more difficult for families and for people on the front line who are trying to work with families as well. So I have been thinking a lot about this and even thinking about it in terms of where our recommendations are going. But I'd be happy to engage in some discussion with you if you'd like to see what the first steps might be.
I'd like that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Yates, that's what's part of, I think, the debate we've been having here. And if you saw Art Rolnick and Arthur Reynolds were talking afterwards, and when Arthur Reynolds was saying, it's got to be a systems approach, and Art Rolnick was saying, it's got to be a scholarship approach, and they were this close doing that, if anybody saw that. It was very interesting. And I almost feel like that's something we're going to have. You know, we can make an investment in our systems, but it isn't nearly as probably prominent, or it's hard to know how that would play out, or we can do scholarships, but maybe the systems development helps families more. That's what. So I think that Representative Winkler really brings out a good point. We don't know, actually, and I think all of you, I want all of you to know it's very much open at this point. I mean, we are trying to figure this out and where we're going, so let us know what you're able to find out. Good. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Yates. And if you can,
you.
Will you be here if any other questions come up, or are you staying around?
I'm actually supposed to go meet with the senator right now.
Oh, okay, well then, thank you. And you're available at other times, and we'll talk further about getting that advisory board going?
That would be great. I'd love to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next we'll have Lauren Siegel from United Way. She is the... I'm not sure exactly what her title is right now. President of the United Way of the Twin Cities area. And we go back a little ways, as I was, my first job out of college was with United Way. And I think Lauren's the highest.
And I wasn't her first boss. I wasn't there at the time.
But you are the highest ranking female executive in United Way, right, across the country. So we're very privileged to have you here in the Twin Cities, and she's on the cutting edge of social services and funding. I also want to thank Lauren and United Way. They did give a $50,000 grant to the Early Childhood Caucus, which has enabled us to hire Lisa Venable, who's here. Lisa, you want to raise wave? And what Lisa and what we've been doing with that money is we have gone around, had forums around the state around early childhood. We also had the top 20 leaders. Some of you were involved in that on Friday. We had a retreat, 5 members from each body. I know Representative Eastland was there. Representative Lane was there. That we are talking with leaders from all of the caucuses about what we should do on this. So that's been a very valuable grant for us to have, and we want to thank you for support. But
we're delighted.
Good.
We have been able to do that.
Good. Thank you. And today we're really here to hear about what you're doing on the child care and early childhood front.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me. As Chair Slawick said, my name is Lauren Siegel, and I'm the President and CEO of the Greater Twin Cities United Way. And as Ms. Yates said, we do serve 9 counties, the traditional 7 metro counties, as well as Chisago and Isanti. And in addition, because we really do try to make sure that all of the organizations that are working in early childhood are coordinated, among other things, I have the privilege to serve on the board of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, who you just heard from. Early childhood development has been a significant interest of the United Way's for over 2 decades. We call our initiative in this area Success by 6. You might have heard of it before. And we call it that to emphasize our goal and what we think should be a community goal. That is, all children are ready for school and prepared for success by the time they enter kindergarten. And in fact, the work that started in Minneapolis almost 2 decades ago has now created and launched almost 400 Success by 6 organizations and programs around the country. So this community is really noted for its work in early childhood in the past. I want to second the messages that you've been hearing over the last several weeks that early childhood development is important to our community in many ways, and I'm not going to belabor the whys. You've heard all those, but just suffice it to say that it's important is heightened by costs that within our educational and juvenile justice systems, and as you've heard, it's increasingly being recognized by many business leaders, many of whom sit on the United Way board and the MELF board, to be seen as an issue for their and or their company and our state's global competitiveness, as they see that they do just simply do not see the workforce in the future that will be need to be able to keep them as a viable institution in the state in the future. And I cannot underemphasize the passion of the business leaders in this area. It has been a joy to watch this segment of our community really get engaged in this issue and to say that this is not a political debate. This is not a Republican or a Democratic discussion. This is a discussion about our children and our future and what's right for the state, and to have them get together with people on all sides of the aisle and all parts of the community to make this happen. I think it's been a very, very wonderful thing for our community overall and for our state. As Art Rolnick and Dr. Reynolds and Katie Williams and others who have come before you in the last few weeks have said, we know what's needed. Quality early childhood education works. In 2006, Greater Twin Cities United Way invested over $5 million in early childhood, with more than $3 million of that funding going to 45 child care centers, including the Minneapolis YWCA that you heard from last week. Our funded centers served 3,000 children last year, 80% of whom were from low-income families with household incomes of less than 200% of the poverty line. 67% were children of color. Our requirements for child care funding include a formal curriculum, annual child care assessments, low staff ratios, cultural competence, and parent development. And the results speak for themselves. In a recent independent review, 92% of the children in these centers are achieving age-appropriate development using a national assessment and are on track for being kindergarten ready. So we feel very good about the opportunities that we are able to provide for some of our highest-risk children. And these high-risk children are the ones that many of your previous speakers have said are the ones that we should focus on first. However, given the significant gap that still exists in the number of children who enter kindergarten ready to thrive, and I'm sure you've heard the statistic that only 50% of the children really enter ready to succeed, we at United Way decided that while our efforts were worthy, they certainly were not sufficient. And so to that end, we have approved an ambitious new plan to propel our work forward. And I'd just like to share with you two elements of our work. While we support and endorse MELF, the Minnesota Learning Foundation, as Ms. Gates said, we can't ask kids to wait 5 years to see what the best programs are. We have children that we have to address their needs right now and get into the pipeline to be strong and healthy adults. So one of our new goals is to double the number of high-risk children that are in quality care, so moving from 3,000 children to 6,000 children. To accomplish this, we anticipate doubling the number of centers that we work with. I kind of think about this as getting the market ready for MELF, because if we can have 90 centers that are high quality, and that because we will only fund centers that use the QRS rating system that MELF and the state is developing and that test kindergarten readiness assessment before the kids graduate, I see this as providing the platform through which MELF children can enter and MELF can do its work and getting the market ready for MELF to implement these and move forward. Now, these programs, the United Way programs in the MELF pilot areas will be part of the project that you just heard about. We are working extensively to coordinate our work with MELF and other organizations, so there won't be a duplication there. And we've also, as an organization, committed $500,000 to MELF for the Art Rolnick-type scholarships that you've heard so much about, so that we are doing center-based or program-based scholarships for much of our work, but then also want to support the consumer-based scholarship model and understand that as well. I mentioned parental involvement is a key part requirement for United Way funding in the early childhood centers that we are currently funding, and our commitment goes beyond just the parents in our funded programs. In our new plan, we've set a two-part goal related to helping parents be their child's first and best teacher. The first goal is that we want to reach 100% of parents with children ages 0 to 5 with support and connections to resources. Doesn't matter whether you're a high need or at a high-risk population or not, we want to make sure that everyone has what they need to understand the importance of early childhood development and how they can be their child's, help their child get all that they need. In our work out in corporations, we have not yet met a parent who says, I have plenty of knowledge. I don't need your help. Thank you. So it really is people on all ends of the spectrum with this broad organizational goal that we want to help. But the second part of our goal is to increase the parenting skills and knowledge of early childhood development of 50% of the low-income parents in our region. So we have a broad goal in, for all parents, and then a very focused, narrow, and much more intensive goal around those parents of high-need children. So to that end, we have a four-point parenting resources program agenda that we believe will get our community started in this direction. The first point is using a resource that we already have. Some of you may not be aware that we run, as do several United Ways around the state, a program called United Way 211, which is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week information and referral phone system, which if from a landline, all you do is dial 211, and you can be connected with resources in just about anything you could possibly have a question on. And in fact, the Greater Twin Cities United Way last year answered 400,000 calls for information and referral, much of it in basic needs, early childhood, and children and families issues. Because we are a statewide, there are statewide hubs that are all connected, this statewide database includes programs that you've heard about, like ECFE, Head Start, Child Care Resource and Referral, but it also has 40,000 other resources to help families find the service that will benefit them. So if we can help parents link into 211, we can help them get the services that they need at any time of the day or night. Second, we are partnering with Twin Cities Public Television to develop a pilot for a series on parenting, and it's going to be produced by the same people who you all are familiar with who produce Almanac. The way we envision this is just like parents turn to public television for Clifford the Big Red Dog and Sesame Street and things like that, why couldn't, after 6 o'clock, they turn to the same public television for parenting information? And so we are working with TPT with the hopes that our pilot will actually become a national model that could be replicated across the country for parenting. And the wonderful thing about that is that through the Minnesota Channel and other things, we can then do this in multiple languages. Those can be put on CDs and taken out to neighborhood centers and family child care centers and other things and shared, so that it does not become a barrier based on economics or based on language. The way somebody described it to me is we want to produce the Barney for adults, or the Clifford the Big Red Dog for adults. The dinosaur, yes. I have to tell you, I don't have children, so this is a new thing for me. I care about children, I just don't have any myself, so I hadn't watched that. But I did after I heard about it. The third element of our parent agenda is that we've developed a toolkit that gives parents specific information to help their children grow and learn at each of the stages in their development. So what are the things that you should be looking at? What are the normal things in a child's development at 3 to 6 months? What is 6 to 12 months? All the way up through age 5. And what are the things that you can do to help with that development? And what can you do to make sure that your child is ready for school? I do have the opportunity to be in a mentoring relationship with two families with children, and I can tell you that many of these high-risk families do not know what to do with their children because they did not receive good parenting themselves. And so this kind of information is really critical because they want to do the right thing, they just don't know how to do the right thing. So how we can help them would be very useful. And the fourth point in our plan is to reach 100% of parents of newborns with parenting resources. And our partners in this effort include the University of Minnesota, the Itasca Project, the Departments of Education and Human Services, among other. We'll couple these efforts with training in parenting skills and behaviors and home visits and mentorings to our most at-risk families. In addition, we'll make sure that the information is available in ways that address the various cultural needs of our region's residents. So it's kind of a wraparound service, both wide and deep. We are to accomplish this, as well as some other points in our early childhood agenda, we are planning to raise and invest an additional $32 million above and beyond over the next 6 years, above and beyond the $5 million a year that we're currently investing, for a total investment of just in these two strategies over the next 6 years of about $56 million. Some of this fundraising is what we're working in coordination with the Minnesota Learning Foundation to make happen, to make sure that the community knows that we are coordinated, that we don't confuse the public, and that we talk about how the two types of programming and work that we're doing go hand in hand. We're doing this now because we're convinced that these efforts will deliver the same kind of return on investment the previous studies have shown can be achieved. So as you look at state policy and you develop your funding priorities, we hope that you'll focus on early childhood, pre-kindergarten development for high-risk children and their parents, giving them the tools they need to make the appropriate choices and a resource so that the choices they make are successful. And with that, I would be happy to stop and answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll take just a question or two because we're going to need to move into the Governor's Summit. Let me just mention one thing is, you know what always impresses me about United Way is your partnership with corporations, and obviously that works with campaigns in the workplaces, but we here at the legislature, that's a weakness of ours, is the partnership concept and working with outside groups. So I hope we also can have that conversation about how we can work with you and your board and MELF's board, because I don't know about you members, but when I hear these numbers of what you're raising, it certainly seems like the best thing for kids is not just what the legislature does, but really, yeah, what you're doing and then doing it together to maximize it. And that's something we, a little bit of a foreign concept here at the legislature. We haven't done very well. Representative Gottwald, is that what you were going to say?
No, Madam Chair, okay. In the interest of time, I won't ask questions, but this has been discussed up in the St. Cloud area as well, the area that I represent, and it's exactly right. I think this idea of private-public partnerships addressing this issue is just dead on, and I really congratulate you.
Thank you very much, and I take to heart, Madam Chair, what you say, and we'll look for opportunities to bring the dialogue together. I think our board members and the Minnesota Learning Foundation board members, many of whom overlap, as well as many other members of the community, the business community, would love the opportunity to sit down and discuss this very important issue.
That would be great. Thank you. So thanks for coming today. We're going to move on to the department and the Governor's Summit.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And with Representative Gottwald already gave me a note that he's interested in working on a parents' involvement group. So I wanted to already put him up as the example that he has sent a note up. He's interested in working in a group on that, and I welcome your involvement. And those of you that are interested, that would be a great group to have. Just hearing even about what United Way was doing. You know, part of the challenge here at the legislature is we don't know what these other groups are even doing. So being able to start to work on that, and let's visit further about that. Members, we have about 30 minutes. We always think we're going to have lots of time, and it goes really fast. Last summer, the governor called for a summit on early childhood. I went, and was there anybody else in the committee that was there? There were a number of legislators that were able to attend that. It was through the National Governors Conference to get out grants to different states. And so Minnesota applied through Governor Pawlenty and received the grant. And I thought there was some good consensus that came out of that conference. So we will let you testify about that. Who is going to start? If you could state your name and title for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Swenson-Clatt with the Department of Human Services, the Child Development Services Unit. Thank you for the invitation to talk today on the summit. I'll go first, followed by Lisa Barnridge and Sharifa Tilnick. And all three of us are here today to share with you a little bit of an overview of this summit and in part convey that the summit was carried out with both support from Department of Human Services and Department of Education. I'm going to provide a brief overview of the summit goals and the context and who attended, and then Ifisa will describe the research that was explored in the summit, and Cherie will wrap up with an overview of the themes. You should have two handouts in front of you describing the summit information. One is just a short two-page overview, and then the other is the actual public report that came out of the summit that's posted on the Department of Education's website. As the Madam Chair mentioned, last spring, the National Governors Association did award Minnesota a grant, a $10,000 grant, to support a summit along with six other states around the country, and they're moving forward also with grants this year to, I think, another 10 states across the country. The summits are an effort to encourage state and local leaders to advance the comprehensive early childhood state agendas, and states are being asked through the summits to engage key leaders and at both the state and local level in incorporating some of the core principles and the framework that are contained in a NGA document called Ready States. That might be an interesting resource for you to look up on the NGA website. In each individual state's plan, including Minnesota, we were asked to respond with a vision and a strategic plan for pursuing a school readiness agenda that includes the roles of families and schools and communities, and to take some steps towards building a comprehensive and coordinated system for school readiness, along with ensuring accountability. And we were told by the NGA staff that Minnesota was one of the states to receive this grant because of the governor's commitment to closing the achievement gap, and to and because of the goals that we outlined towards building a comprehensive and coordinated system that really focuses on the needs of at-risk children. That was we were unique among, I think, the seven states last year in that very strong focus on at-risk. So the goals of the summit in Minnesota included a really careful examination of the research base, very similar to the work that you've heard Mel describe today, but then also developing some concrete steps to improve and coordinate our programs towards a vision of all children entering school ready to learn. So the summit was a two-part event. It the first phase took place in June with an advisory group of about 40 leaders from around the state. And at that event, we examined the research base around practices and features of early childhood programs that really are shown to impact children's school readiness. And then we compared those research practices and features to five early childhood programs funded through state-funded programs. So those programs included ECSE, school readiness, Head Start, child care quality supports, and child care assistance. The outcome of that first phase was then a set of findings about how those programs match up against those research findings. And then in the second phase of the summit, which took place in July with a larger group, the phase one attendees participated as well as additional participants and reviewed those findings and then spent some time developing concrete recommendations for program improvements. The participants of both phase one and phase two included child care and early childhood practitioners, policymakers, many organizations around the state. I think there were about 40 participants in phase one and another 80 in the second phase. And four legislators did attend, Representative Flawick, Representative Demmer, Senators Clark and Roebling. At the second phase, the governor did speak to the audience and really charged us with developing recommendations for strategic investment rather than just putting more money into the early childhood system and to align the funding with what matters for kids. So at this point, Lisa will talk about the research that we reviewed.
Okay, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives of the committee. My name is Lisa Barnage, and I'm from the Department of Education. I work in the Early Learning Services and work closely with the Department of Human Services on the Governor's Summit. As Deb had just mentioned, the overall goal of the Minnesota Governor's Summit on School Readiness was to improve and coordinate Minnesota's early childhood programs so as to increase the readiness of children as they enter kindergarten. One of the objectives of the summit was to identify research-based program practices and features critical to the effectiveness of early childhood programs, and then to incorporate those program practices and features into Minnesota's early childhood programs and systems. To this end, the departments requested that Dr. Susan B. Newman and Dr. Arthur J. Reynolds develop a list of critical features and practices that national research has shown to find or has shown essential for successful early childhood programs. Dr. Newman is the former U.S. Assistant Secretary to Elementary and Secondary Education under President George W. Bush, as well as a professor at the University of Michigan on educational studies and specializing in early literacy development. As well, Dr. Reynolds, who you heard from last week, is the director of the Chicago Longitudinal Study, as well as a professor at the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota. Together, the two doctors, Drs. Newman and Reynolds, identified 10 elements and presented the research behind these elements at the Senate. These 10 elements are located on the back sheet of your two-page summary of the summit. They include beginning early, as well as targeting children at risk, effects of early education on school performance, and social adjustments are great for children that are at risk for school failure. Additionally, there's the intensity of instruction, the actual content and activities that children are instructed upon during programs are important. Compensatory services include instruction that accelerates literacy and language, as well as mathematical thinking. Highly trained professionals also prove to have higher quality programs for children. Strong accountability systems, monitoring the program quality is also important. Comprehensive services that address the children's overall needs as well as their family, and including opportunities for parent involvement, was shown important by research. Small class sizes, specifically research showed that early child class sizes should be less than 20 and have staff ratios of 10 to 1. Length and duration, research has shown that actually the length of a program, the hours in a day and the days of as well as the duration, how many years children are in the program, has showed to have positive gains on what children learn while in the program. And also coordination of transition to kindergarten and other early grades can help sustain the effects of the children gain in preschool. During phase one of the summit, participants were actually asked to consent upon these elements and use the elements for their analysis of the Minnesota programs that Deb just mentioned. And then in the second phase of the summit, these elements were again used as a basis for recommendations that participants developed to forward on to the governor for his consideration. Additionally, many participants have taken these elements back to their daily work to improve their own programs, as well as create their platforms and future plans for themselves. These elements have proved very useful and were an integral part to our summit in developing the recommendations and in our future work. Sheree will now go ahead and talk about some of the policy considerations that came out of the summit.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Sheree Patilnik, and I manage the Child Care Assistance Program. And I believe I spoke with you all last week about the Child Care Assistance Program. Lisa told you a little bit about the elements and research tells us need to be in place for the kids. I think the thing that I really want to emphasize here that was kind of an aha for everybody, and it was a lot of work to pull it together, but it was a very important finding for all the people at the table, and that is that Minnesota has lots of really great programs that are publicly funded. These programs, if you put them all together, would include all of the research elements. When you look at each of these programs separately, there isn't one that actually meets the needs of all the kids for child development for children at risk. And so the challenge that we came up with is we have a big public investment in child care and early education in Minnesota. But are we doing it most strategically? And I think the governor did a great job of setting the stage for us to think about the next phase of that process. He challenged us, you, them, everybody who was there. There was a huge group of people who were all committed to this effort. He challenged us all to consider how we could align the current programs in Minnesota to the research elements, especially for children at risk, so that we make more strategic use of existing and new funds. He was not holding us to just existing funds, but he was saying, unless you figure out how to use existing funds more effectively, what's the point of adding new funds? And I think that was a real important statement to bring to the table. I think the people who were at the summit took it seriously. And the recommendations were many and varied. For the most part, the recommendations were program specific, but there were some themes that came through from program to program about things we need to look at and things we need to change. I was interested in listening to the United Way presentation and to the MELF presentation because many of the themes that came through in the Governor's Summit are things that they are working on and are reiterating as important themes for Minnesota. I don't know if it's because they were all there and influenced the recommendations or whether they were there and the conversation influenced their plans. But one way or another, things were influenced, and we seem to, in many ways, be on the same page. Of course, there's always room to bring that closer together. So the other interesting part is that the recommendations, as Representative Winkler mentioned, may or may not require legislation or new money. There's lots of things that we can do to improve the way programs are delivered, the way services are delivered within existing funding and within existing legislative parameters. There's other things that we need legislation. There's other things that we need more money. But I'm going to walk you through the first theme to give you kind of an idea of how we can process through this stuff. The first theme was intensity and duration. I just talked about Minnesota's current array of publicly funded early childhood education programs are not sufficient in duration or intensity to meet the needs of children, children determined not to be fully prepared for kindergarten. An example of this is that Head Start, ECFE, school readiness, those are all part day, part year, part week programs. In many, many cases, they have very strong components that address the other elements. They address instruction, intensity of instruction. They address professional development. They address lots of the other things that need to happen. But the kids aren't with them very much. If you look at the child care program, we have duration. We spend a lot of time with the kids. The extent to which the child care programs have all of the other elements is limited. Some of them do, some of them don't. And in every case, I mean, I'm making generalizations here, but in every case, there are pockets of excellence where everything comes together, where the child care program is excellent and does everything, where the Head Start program is full day, all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, the regulations don't require that, and that may not be happening. An example of a win-win thing that we could be doing and that we are doing with no legislation required is that we are working very hard with the leaders in the Head Start program, with the leaders of the Head Start Collaboration Grant in Department of Education, and with the Department of Human Services Child Care Assistance Program to start trying to figure out the details necessary to improve the partnerships between the Head Start and the child care program so that families can have access to comprehensive services and have the duration for those services that they need to actually make a difference. We met in Washington, D.C. last week and made a plan, and we are moving on that plan. It includes two things. One is figure out exactly how the funding should be interconnected between Head Start and child care so that nobody gets in trouble when the auditor comes in the door. So how much money should be spent with the child care Head Start partnership, and how much of it should be Head Start, and how much of it should be child care, and how does it have to be accounted for? That's hard stuff to figure out when you have federal regulations that you have to follow, and when you have auditors that are going to come and see you, and when you could lose your whole program if you do it wrong. So that's one important thing that we need to make available. The other is that we help Head Start providers work with county agencies to help families become eligible for MSEP. There are many families who would be eligible for MSEP but can't negotiate the process. And when they do negotiate the process, they can't meet the participation requirements or meet the authorized activity requirements in a way that allows them to attend Head Start Child Care Partnership on a regular basis. These are things that are available already in the current system that aren't working as well as they could be that we need to tweak, and we're working on those kind of things. If we get that all fixed and it works out well, I think an investment would be good. But I'm not representing the governor on that one. So that's an example. Other examples under the first bullet, and I'm not going to go this deeply into all the bullets, but I want to give you a kind of a way we can look at these bullets. Explore opportunities to incorporate family, friend, and neighbor providers into existing state and federal programs. There's over 150,000 of these providers in the state. Deb talked about those in her presentation last week. For many families, that is the best choice or the only choice. We don't know much about the quality in those programs. We talked a lot with United Way and with MELF about the importance of parent education. Family, friends, and neighbor education is just as important because kids spend a lot of time there, and the environment is very similar to the parenting atmosphere. So we need to figure out a way to reach out to those families more effectively. We haven't made plans for that yet. Create continuity in child care and education settings. It's critical for at-risk children during their early years. I mentioned again that there are 30,000 kids served annually by the Child Care Assistance Program, and I mentioned that last week. When the Child Care Assistance Program pays for a lot of care for these kids, but we have not got any incentives to connect them to higher quality care with more comprehensive services, or we don't have those services available, is that the best use of our money, or could we be a little bit more strategic? So that's kind of a deeper look at the theme number one. Theme number two has similar things. Embed as educational instruction. I cannot say that no matter how hard I try. But the concentrated educational experiences for at-risk children should be available in all early childhood care and education settings. We talked about the importance of intentional concentrated instruction. We also have to talk about the importance of the instruction being in the place where the children are, not having to move the children for that, and being tailored to the educational experience, and tailoring the educational experience to the child's needs. And that's where the ongoing valid child assessment comes in. We need to know what the kids need, when they need it, and how to bring them to the next level. So those are things that we need to think about with all the recommendations. The policy considerations below talk to those kind of things. Theme three relates to the transition to kindergarten. You can all read. You have the same papers that I have. What I would like to leave you with is that attention to this coordination can help sustain the effects of preschool. Ready kids, ready schools, we've talked about it a lot. We need to make sure that schools and early childhood programs are interacting so that the children get the best benefit of both experiences.
I'm wondering if the members have questions. Will we have a few minutes, or what do you think?
So there's just theme four and theme five. Theme four is related to professional development. Theme five is related to program transparency. I believe the MELF program calls program transparency empower parents. It's the same thing. It's make information available to parents. Parents need to be partners. They need to have all the necessary information, and the parent and the child care provider have to be a team working toward the best interest of kids. So I will stop with that. And I will
leave it to questions. Thank you. I hope there are some quick questions if you can let us know. I know from my standpoint, I look at all this and it's overwhelming. And I think, about all of us and all these meetings we go through all day and how we get all this stuff and how we, I just want to flip a switch on and make things better, And it's so much. If you can help us, maybe we should visit at another time about what are the two or three or four things we could do that would really change the system. And I think that's, when I was there, I think that was the real feeling, is people do want a good system, Representative Winkler, but how you do this, when you even look at all of, these are potential bills, all of them, these ideas, is what do we really do that's strategic? And we'd sure be open to your advice on that. Are there any questions, members? Is it enough food for thought? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm so concerned about the family, friends, and neighbors programs because they seem to have the least scrutiny and oversight of all the programs, and yet I forget what percentage of child care is done in those settings. And I'm wondering if you've thought of any strategies or you have developed any plans. I think I heard you say that you've done the least with that, perhaps. And there is, as I understand, there's state, maybe federal funding that goes into those programs also. And so have you, I guess my question is, have you thought of any strategies? Have you begun any work to deal with both the issue of quality and oversight and professional development, all those pieces that go into making a good program for students?
Who would like to take that?
Madam Chair, Representative, we absolutely have begun some work with family, friend, and neighbor caregivers, primarily in the child care quality unit through our supports and coordination with the child care resource and referral agencies in the state. We have provided both federal and some of a little bit of our state funding to the RNRs to provide outreach services to family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. But this is really new and emerging work for us, and our focus initially has been to provide training to R&R staff and working with this new population of providers and supports for all of the child care resource and referral staff around the state to network with each other and learn from each other about working with this unlicensed population. We're very cognizant of the fact that many family, friend, and neighbor caregivers are from communities of color and from non-English speaking communities, and so that again speaks to the need to provide training and ensure that we have the right staff in place at the local R&R level to work with providers. But there are some wonderful things happening, and I think that the R&Rs there are fine examples of specific R&Rs really moving forward and taking the initiative to seek out their own private funding. The Bush Foundation is one funder in the state that has invested a lot in piloting different initiatives and outreach efforts with FFN. CCRNR agency that serves the East Metro area and West Metro as well has a grant currently from the Bush Foundation to develop curriculum for FFN caregivers. So those are a couple of examples of work that is underway. And our newest initiative with the R&Rs has invited them to submit plans to us that I think will demonstrate how they can move forward from where they are now with the staff and resources that they have to effectively working with FFN. So just a few examples of where we've started. But again, I think that there's much room for improvement and for really targeted efforts to the FFN community.
Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair, just a follow-up comment, I guess. I would also be very concerned that the people who are doing the training or professional development with those caregivers also has the qualifications to be doing that, so that they're developmentally appropriate kinds of training and dealing with what the kinds of activities that really should be going on in those settings. And so I don't know if anyone's monitoring those training programs either. So that might be a question. I don't know if you have people who are qualified doing that, or who you submit RFPs for those trainers, or how that professional development is done. But I think that is another subject that needs to be pursued.
Madam Chair, Representative, I agree. I think don't have that kind of close oversight of the individuals that are providing training and working directly with FFN, but need to be moving in that direction. Another example of supports for a portion of the FFN providers in the state is a legislation that was passed last year through the ECFE program to enable relatives, which are the majority of FFN caregivers, as I talked about a week ago, to participate in ECFE classes. I did just have a conversation with one of my MDE colleagues yesterday, actually, about how that work is going. And I think there, it sounded like there's much room for improvement and opportunity to reach out to relative caregivers and invite them into ECFE programs. In that setting, and in an ECFE setting, I think that might be as advantageous a setting for working with FFN as the kind of outreach that's happening, beginning to happen through the child care resource and referral systems, because in many cases we're talking more about a parent ed approach that can be just as effective as a child care provider training approach.
Okay. Is it a quick question, Representative Wardlow? Can we fit it in 2 minutes?
I'm kind of overwhelmed, so I was just thinking, there's a care provider that I know who does training for other care providers, and she might be someone we could bring up here to talk about what she does. But is there any thought to looking, it's like a 5,000 piece puzzle. You throw it out there and then you don't know where to start. And I guess when you do that, you look at one piece, let's start here. And so we could maybe, is there some thought to just picking a policy and say, let's, intensifying the services, or more in depth in teaching math, or is there any thought to just grab hold on something and maybe go into different centers around the state and say, this is a really good one. Let's copy them. They're doing that little piece that's good. That they're doing it the right way.
You know what I'd like to do, Representative Wardlow, is we're going to have the departments up here to do the governor's budget. If we can hold that thought and talk about, what would be a good way to start. And I don't know, we're in the Department of Ed this Thursday and DHS a week from Thursday. So let's talk about who can answer that well, and we'll follow up at that time. I think we achieved our objective today, which was to talk about what's innovative in early childhood funding, and it seems like there's a lot out there. Our objective for Thursday is to hear the governor's budget from the Department of Education. For the next Tuesday, again, is the tour, and the next Thursday we'll be hearing from the Department of Human Services. I almost called you Representative Kotelnik. Ms. Kotelnik? Promotion, right? Demotion?
Actually, I believe there has been a little bit of a change in plan, because the Department of Human Services has an initiative that is also supportive of the early childhood agenda that the governor's office has. So I believe you'll be hearing from Department of Human Services and Department of Education on the governor's initiative on Thursday.
Okay, good. Well, then somebody can certainly answer the question. Okay, good. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.